As you may have picked up in Dee's prayer, what we're going to be talking about tonight is the subject of discipleship. And we've been talking for a number of weeks now about what it means to be a disciple, someone who follows after Jesus. That's the simplest picture of what it is. But tonight, I want to talk specifically about what it means to be a leader. I want to give you some wisdom about being a leader. And I understand that not everyone here is in leadership. But I believe that what I have to share and what we can look at tonight, whether you're leading or not, is actually very good to see. I'm going to give you a picture of where my thoughts have come about for tonight. Last night, I had the joy of eating dinner with a whole group of people in leadership at Orb. If you were there, would you raise your hand just so people can see? There were a lot of us there. I think there might have been around 70 who were together. Now, it was a dinner for appreciating the leadership in this church. It's not the first time that we've had a dinner to appreciate leaders. The first one that I recall was back in 2003. Michelle and I had invited, at that time, the only leadership team was the high school ministry team, and we invited them over to our house for dinner. We lived in an apartment at that time that had a very small kitchen. It had no dining room or table to eat at. We ate around our coffee table. Remember that? There's a few people who were there. And in the years since then, as you can see, the group has grown quite a bit. For those of you unfamiliar with Orb, when we started, it was just an outreach to high school students. And from that time until now, the group has grown considerably. So that last night, all those folks would not have fit around our coffee table. Now, if someone asked me, and sometimes people do ask me this question, how do you account for that growth over the last few years? How did that happen? There's one thing that immediately comes to mind for me. And it's not the ultimate reason for the way the group has grown, but it sure is one of the most apparent reasons. And it's simply this, that over these last years, there have been a group of people who have been totally dedicated to following Jesus in the work that he has for them to do by serving as leaders in this ministry. I think that's very apparent to me. And so when I look out at this group and see how it's grown, it's pretty clear to me that it's because so many people have decided to follow Jesus and do the work that he calls them to, that this group has grown as it has. Now, I spend some time every morning reading the Bible, and I came across some words a few months back that I put in my memory, and I thought, sometime I'm going to talk to all of the leaders at Orb. I'm going to give them the wisdom that I see in these words. Larissa spoke to the children about not being afraid. She spoke about some words from Deuteronomy. That's what we're going to look at tonight. Now, I hesitated to bring them out. As I said, not all of you are in leadership at Orb. But this is why I feel comfortable sharing these tonight. And I want to make this plain. As fun as last night was for us as leaders, there have been a lot of nights in the last years, in my experience, that have not been so fun. Has anyone here in leadership ever found that it's really hard sometimes? When you're working with a high school student who you care about and you reach out to them repeatedly and they turn away and hurt themselves and it hurts your heart to see them struggling. That's hard, isn't it? Or the many ups and downs of the young adult ministry in Orb. Some of us have been through those. There have been times where I was ready to quit. It was so difficult. And I'm not the only person. Every person in leadership in that group has found that there have been struggles. Let me just say two words. Children's ministry. It's been hard. There have been many times when every leadership group in this church has found that following Jesus in the tasks that he gives has become so hard that it feels more like a war or a battle than anything else. Is that right? Yeah. Now, I can say that to those of you who are in leadership, and I can also say that to any one of you here who is not in leadership but is trying genuinely to follow after Jesus, you know what I mean when I say that life can give you challenges as a disciple that are so hard they're like an enemy standing right in your path. Addictions that keep you from being the person Jesus means you to be. The way that the entire culture that we live in is flowing in a different direction than a person who's trying to follow Jesus. This can be like an enemy. The discouragement, the tiredness, the busyness that's in your life, all of these things can rise up like enemies against the task that God sets before a person to follow him. And so I would say it's true to think of the life of discipleship, whether you're in leadership or you're just a person trying on your own to follow after Christ, this is a life that's more like a battle than anything else, the harder you get into it. And so the words that I want us to look at together tonight are words that come from a military official to a group of people who are about to engage in a battle. I want you to grab the Bible that's there on your pew and find your way to Deuteronomy chapter 20. Can you still hear me in the back if I don't use the microphone? Okay, great. If anyone else in the back can't hear me, just talk to the guy who put his thumb up, because he apparently can't hear me. Chapter 20 in Deuteronomy is page 154. On the Bibles that we've put out in the pews, you'll see the title there says Rules of Warfare. Before we read them together, I want to give you a very brief picture of the setting of these words, where they were first spoken, okay? Pretty easy. You may or may not know that at one time in their history, the people of Israel was held captive in Egypt. They were oppressed there, they were slaves. And you probably have heard of a man named Moses. God used Moses to lead them out of Egypt and free them from that oppression. What you may not know is that after leaving Egypt, they ended up in the desert, which was hard for them. And they ended up there for like 40 years. It was really hard. It was so hard that a lot of them wanted to go back to Egypt. But God led them nonetheless through Moses, through years and years in this desert. And he brought them to a place that he had promised them, which was, we know it as the Promised Land. Maybe you've heard of that. God had promised them when he freed them from Egypt that he had a land to give them. And the book of Deuteronomy, the entire book, this was described to me by a professor at a seminary, is sort of like a long sermon that Moses gives to the people right before they go into the Promised Land. Okay, so I want you to use your imagination for a moment. You are among the group of people who've survived this flight from Egypt. You've been in the desert for a long time. Moses has been leading you. And right before you go to the place that God has promised you, he gives a very long sermon. It's many chapters, okay? It's very long. They had some caffeine substitute back then, so you didn't have any trouble staying awake the entire time. But in the midst of this address, and this is why it's important for you to understand the context, Moses is going to remind you, as a group of people who are following God, he's going to remind you of the things that you need to know to face the trials that will certainly stand in your way if you try to follow God. Got it? Moses is going to encourage and challenge and tell you the things you need to know to do what you need to do. One last thing about the context, right before we read chapter 20. The Israelites are standing in the hills east of the River Jordan. They're looking across the valley that this river cuts up into the Promised Land. And what they see over there, when they look into this land that God has promised them, is they see armies and enemies that are a lot stronger than they are. They look on this side of the Jordan, and they see a group of people who have been wandering around in the desert for a generation. And they look on the other side, and they see warriors who have been preparing for battle for as long as they've lived in that land. They look on this side, they see a few donkeys, and maybe some wheelbarrows made of wood. They look on the other side, and there are horses and chariots. There are warriors that are armed to the teeth. And they look here and they think, how on earth are we going to be able to face that enemy? There's no way. Now, incidentally, I will tell you, if you're a leader in Orb, there'll be a time when you see the challenge that God calls you to that makes you as frightened as those people would have been seeing the armies on the other side. And if you're a person in this room who decides to go after Jesus and follow him, there'll be a time when, like those Israelites, you look and what you see is way stronger than you. But look how this address begins. And this is the beginning of chapter 20. And I just want to read it to you. And I want you to just hear these words. When you go out to war against your enemies and see horses and chariots, an army larger than your own, you shall not be afraid of them. For the Lord your God is with you, who brought you up from the land of Egypt. Before you engage in battle, the priest shall come forward and speak to the troops and shall say to them, Hear, O Israel, today you are drawing near to do battle against your enemies. Do not lose heart or be afraid or panic or be in dread of them, for it is the Lord your God who goes with you to fight for you against your enemies to give you the victory. I'll stop there for a minute. This is the first thing that happens. As this group of people stands looking across the way at their enemy, the priest steps forward and tells them what makes no sense. Don't be afraid.
Don't be afraid, because you see that enemy over there? Yes, they're stronger than you. There's no chance on your own strength that you'll beat them. But here's the thing I want you to hear. If you are following the path that God has for you, if you're walking in the direction that you're going in because you're going behind Him, it doesn't matter how frightening the enemy looks, you don't have to be afraid. Because you're not the one who has to battle that enemy. God is going to do it. And therefore, there's no need to panic or to be in dread. Just be assured that God will do the things He means to, so long as you're going in the direction that He's leading. Now, when I read that in the morning a few months ago, I thought, I want to say that in the hearing of every person who is leading in order. Because I know from experience that sometimes the work that God has called us to in this church is frightening and difficult. It can feel like an enemy there's no way that we can overcome. But the good news is that what was true then is true now. And that is that we don't have to have the strength on our own to overcome the enemies that we face when we follow God. He has it. And for those of you who aren't in any active ministry leading somewhere, let me tell you two things. One, God means for you to use your gifts to serve in the world. And that means becoming an active servant in some form of ministry. But the other thing I want you to know is that when you see before you some enemy that's terrifying and that is stronger than you, you don't need to be afraid so long as you're walking in the direction you are, because God's leading you there. He has the strength to overcome that enemy, and He will do that. And that's the first thing I wanted to bring before us tonight. Now I want you to look down at the text again, because in this scene, after the priest comes forward and gives this pep talk, encouraging them, there's another person who comes forward, the official, and in a way, he does just the opposite. He's not Mr. Encouragement. He's quite discouraging. Let's look at what he says. Verse 5 says, "Then the officials shall address the troops, saying, 'Has anyone built a new house but not dedicated? He should go back to his house, or he might die in the battle and another dedicate it. Has anyone planted a vineyard but not yet enjoyed its fruit? He should go back to his house, or he might die in the battle and another be first to enjoy its fruit. Has anyone become engaged to a woman but not yet married her? He should go back to his house, or he might die in the battle and another marry her.'" But I want to stop there. I spent a lot of time thinking about this, and what I want to bring before you from these words is just simply three ideas. And I'm convinced that if we would take these ideas and put them into our own minds, it would make it much easier for us to do the things that God means for us to do as we try to follow Him. It's wonderful to be brave, but there's some wisdom here that we need. And I want to point you to three, what I think are very profound ideas that come from this text. Okay, I want you to look at it again and notice that there's something repeated three times. It's this phrase, "he might die." Did you hear that in the text? Imagine that after the priest says, "Everything's going to be fine. God's going to help you fight the battles." And then this guy comes and says, "All right, you might die." And then says it again, "You might die." And then one more time, "You might die." Is anybody in here afraid of dying? Two nods. A battle is a dangerous thing. In a battle, there is an enemy that has weapons and it can destroy you. In a battle, you have to be prepared to lose everything when you go in, or you're never going to go in with your whole heart. The fact is, a battle is dangerous. And as much as I would like maybe to say otherwise, the truth is, in this story, these people are facing a battle because they're following God, which means they're going to be in dangerous, risky, very frightening circumstances because they've decided to follow God. That's just a fact. Do you see that clearly in the text? I have to tell you that it is a very, very popular thing these days in our country for a pastor to stand in a church and to paint a picture of discipleship that is very attractive because it's soft, fluffy, and really easy. Jesus is presented as your buddy. You ever hear that song? "My buddy, my buddy." I asked him, have you ever heard that? I've listened recently, and when I was in Colorado, even encountered some of this, where a pastor will stand before a group of people like I stand before you and present a picture of Jesus that is so easy and that demands absolutely nothing of you except to just try it out, in the same way that you try out a magic pill, which if you swallow would make all your troubles go away. If you would follow Jesus, you'll not be stressed anymore, you'll probably lose some weight, your teeth will get whiter, your breath will smell good. If you will follow him, everything you ever dreamed of will happen. The car that you want, the house that you dream about, the easy life that you see on television, you can't get it from their products, but I'll sell you a product, and it's Jesus. And all you need to do is just believe in him, and he loves you. And it's so... You know what it is? I'm sorry to say this. It's just not true. Now, please don't get me wrong. I believe that it is the right thing for you to follow Jesus, wherever he leads you. I believe that he is the one who will give you real life and what's absolutely best for you. But here's the thing. The first thing that happens to a disciple when they come to Jesus, the first thing he does is he tells you that everything you used to think was the best, everything you used to think was good, is probably wrong. And where you think life was, it's not. And if you want to follow him, you'll have to be ready to abandon all of the things that you think are so important to you. All of the things that you are sure will make you happy and you're sure will make your life easy. You have to be willing to let go of them, he says. And if you will follow him, you have to be ready to grab onto something that is going to be hard, a challenge, very difficult. The life of discipleship is not easy. And I've said this week after week, and as long as I hear other people saying otherwise, I'm going to say it as louder. It's hard to be a Christian. Following Jesus is a real challenge. I don't do you any good if I sell him to you and make you think he's going to be something that he's not. He is so good. He is the best. He's the only way to have real life. But you and I, so often we have no idea what real life is until we come to him and he shatters our small images of what it means to be alive and rebuilds them for us. And what he says to us, this is what Jesus said when he was around teaching. He said things that people said, this is too hard. I can't do what he's saying. And Jesus looked at them and said, I am speaking the words of life and spirit. I know that a lot of you don't believe, but no one can follow unless God gives them the power to do that. And this is in John 6:66. It's one of my favorite verses. It says, after that, many of the disciples stopped following him because it was too hard. The first lesson in what this official says for us as disciples and as leaders is you might die. Now, I want to tell you, I don't mean that, like, I'm so glad that no leaders have died at any of our events yet. But what I do mean, and I mean this very seriously, is that to follow after Jesus means to be willing to let go of everything. He put it like this. The person who tries to save their life will lose it. But the person who will lose their life for me will gain it. And that's the first lesson of discipleship that I see in this, is that you might die. It's going to be hard to follow. Now, there's a second lesson, which I find in here. It's also another phrase that's repeated over and over again. Did you see what the other phrase was? The one was, he might die. Look there for a moment in those words, starting in verse 5. The other thing that the official says three times is he should go back to his house. Okay, think about that for a moment. I want you to use your imagination. You are with a group of people it's too small to fight the enemy that's across the way. They're stronger than you are, and you're looking at one another and thinking, we have to fight that large army over there. How are we going to do it? And then some guy comes out in front of everybody and starts sending people home. I mean, if you look with your eyes at this situation that they're in, the Israelites are in at this moment, it looks like every single person has to fight with all of their strength, or there's no way that the battle's going to be won. The only possible chance this group has of overcoming this enemy is if everyone there fights with the strength of three people. Every hand needs to be used, every person that can possibly be mustered has to be in this fight, or there's no way that the enemy is going to be overcome. Now, I'm going to make a confession to you. There have been many nights where I, as the person who gets to lead in org, find myself thinking, how can I get more people in this church to be involved in leading? Because the only way org's going to do the things that God has for it is if everybody gets involved in leading. Absolutely everybody. I want all of you to be leaders. And in one way or another, I think that's true. And so I find myself going in this mindset. Everybody needs to be involved. How can I get more people to do children's ministry? More people to do young adult group? How can we get more people to do high school ministry? How can I get somebody to vacuum my carpet in my office? I find myself doing this, that the only way that we'll make it and do the work God has for us is if everybody, everywhere gets involved in it. And if that were true, then this official should have said, you might die, but nobody's going anywhere. Right? You might lose everything, but absolutely, no question, don't leave. Lock the doors, you're here for good. But the official says the exact opposite. You hear that over and over again? The official says, you can go. You can go home. Now, I think this is beautifully freeing. And it rests upon an idea that very few people who are serious about following God understand. And I myself forget this often. And here's the idea that it's based on. God can do what he needs to do without all of us. I love the slogans that I hear well-meaning Christians say. We are God's hands and God's feet. We're the mouthpiece of God. If we won't speak up for him, nobody will. No one will hear about who God is if we won't speak. No one will do the work that God needs done if we don't get to work and do it. God cannot bring his kingdom on earth unless we're willing to get up and do it for him. Have you ever heard a stirring speech like that? Lies! Paul says this in Acts. He says, he's describing God to a large group of people in Athens. He says, God doesn't live in a temple built with human hands. And then he says, God is not served by human hands. It's as if he needed anything. God made the whole universe. He can do whatever he wants without our help. And this is the truth. And it's true for that group there while they were standing on the edge of that river looking and saying, we're way weaker than that group. The truth is, God didn't actually need them to do the work that he wanted to do over there. So the official was free to dismiss them and say, you know what? You can go. And there's no sarcasm in his voice. And there's no condemnation for those people. He's not saying to them, you know what? Just leave. We don't need you anyway. And then like talking bad about them. He just is free. You can go. And the reason is God is able to do whatever he wants. And he doesn't need us. That's really free. Now, please, if you all quit leadership tonight, I'm going to die. I might. But the problem there would be only that I didn't believe in God enough. That's a really freeing thing. That second message for all of us is that God doesn't need us as much as we usually think. That's a great thing to remember. And so if you would lead in this ministry, do so free of the delusion that God can't get on without you. But serve joyfully. Now there's one other thing in this passage, which I think is also really stunning. Let me tell you what I thought the first time I read this. Okay, I'm going to be honest. The first time I read this, I started thinking, because he says you might die, he says you can go home, but then he also talked about three scenarios. Did you hear what the scenarios were? Someone who just bought a house, someone who just got a wife, and someone who just planted a vineyard. This is confession time. The first time I read it, I started thinking about people in the group, I'm so ashamed of myself, who weren't doing enough ministry because they had spent too much time with their relationships, or too much time at their homes, or too much time at work. I really thought that. I thought, man, I'm going to get up there and tell them, you got to put God before your mom, your family, before your house, and before your business. I really did think that. Now, this is a challenge for me, because I actually believe Jesus does come before all those things. I do. But I don't think that's what's going on here with the official. And I want you to look at this carefully with me, because I spent some time on this. Did you notice that there's a reason why he tells people who have just become married, or just got a house, or just planted a vineyard, not to come? It's that they might die, and he anticipates something that would happen if they died. Look at it. It says, and this is verse 5, it says, you should go back to your house, or he might die in the battle and another dedicated. Look at the end of verse 6. Another be first to enjoy its fruit. And then look at the end of verse 7. Another married. I started wondering, what? I don't get it. Like, it's not that you shouldn't get involved if you just got married because, you know, you might die, and we don't want you to die, but it's so that this anticipated consequence doesn't come to be. That is, that you're engaged, and you die, and somebody else gets your wife. Does that seem kind of puzzling to anybody else? Does it? Has anybody here read through the whole book of Deuteronomy? Okay. Do you know how often in Deuteronomy there's this this idea repeated. And it's like this. If you follow God and do the things that He tells you you should do, He'll be good for you. Right? And then the opposite, right? If you don't follow God and you don't do the things that He tells you to, it will be bad for you. Okay, this sounds like a very basic idea. It is a pretty basic idea. But if you would read through this long sermon of Moses, Deuteronomy, you'll see that he sometimes spends whole chapters describing the good things that will happen if the people will just do the things that God says, and describing the bad things that will happen if they don't do the things that God says they should do. Just to give you a little picture of what I mean. It's things like this. If you would just follow God, Moses says, you'll have the things you need. The rain will come. You'll have enough crops. You'll have health and security. You'll feel safe. You'll be at peace with the people around you. I'll protect your camp from wild animals. It actually does say that. And there's a bunch of blessings like this. You'll have children. There'll be peace in your families. And it will be good for you. On the other hand, if you don't do the things that I'm commanding you today, Moses tells him, it will be miserable for you. There will be many terrible things that happen to you. If you decide not to follow God, your life will not only not be blessed, but it will look pretty cursed. It will look really messed up. And incidentally, when I was a bit younger, I used to think this was kind of mean of God and severe. And in the last 5 years, what I've seen in working with people and thousands of people is that it's almost always the case. When people start wandering away from God to pursue life in their own way, it ruins them. It really does make their life look like it's cursed. Has anybody else ever seen that? It's not because, I don't think it's because God's sort of arbitrary and gives rewards. It's just sin is bad for you and obedience is good for you. And this is why I tell you about this theme of obedience being bad obedience being good and walking away from God being bad. There's a list that's given at one point in Deuteronomy of the curses, warnings against disobedience. And listen to one of them that's in there. I'll just read it. This is what will happen, it says. If you will not obey the Lord your God by diligently observing all His commandments and decrees, which I am commanding you today, then these curses will come upon you. Listen to this curse. You shall become engaged to a woman, but another man shall lie with her. You shall build a house, but not live in it. You shall plant a vineyard, but another will enjoy its fruit. Now, this is what I think the third lesson for us, all of us, who would be disciples and who would be leaders, is it's not possible that we could follow God and do the things that He means for us to do, and the result be a life that looks like a cursed life. I've seen situations where people are so used up in churches that it ruins their marriages, it destroys their homes, it wrecks their businesses, and their lives go to pieces and become a mess and look like a curse. And what I think the official is telling this group there on the edge of going into the promised land, he's telling them, the priest says, don't be afraid. You don't need to be afraid if you're following God. Then the official says, you might die. It's going to be a great challenge here. This is not going to be easy. You're going to have to be willing to let go of everything. Then he says this, though. After saying that, he says, but you are free to go home. We can make it without you because God's got all the power. And in fact, if anyone here, and I'm saying this now in particular to all of you who are here, who are at work in Oregon in this ministry, if following God means your marriage is ruined, or your business falls apart, or your home is wrecked, it can't be true that He would lead you in that way. It can't. And so you in particular, if there's somebody here who's engaged, where's Anthony? You can go home. No, I want you to thank you for being in church. This is a beautiful and freeing thing for all of us who are meant to follow God. It can't be that following Him should lead us in a way that looks like a curse. That's not who God is. He will attack every enemy that we face, with or without us. We should follow Him, knowing that He has all the power, but never in such a way that we throw ourselves into the ruin that would look so much like a curse as these things do. Now, I want to say to every one of you here tonight, as a final word,
Sometimes I feel like the priest who gets to stand up before you and say, don't be afraid. And other times I feel like the official who gets to stand before a group of troops and rally them up and tell them, go for it, you can do it. But this is the thing that I like best, and I want to share this and then end. And I felt this especially last night at that dinner. I'm also one of the troops. I'm with you in this. And for me, it is an absolute joy and a beautiful thing to be able to work alongside a group of people like this. And I saw that so clearly as I went away last weekend. It was a nice place, the place where I was. But I can't tell you what a joy it is to come back home and to be with you in this adventure together following God. Let's pray.